Podcasting is a complicated profession, and that's why we're here to talk about Star Wars, The Bad Batch, ending its first season run on Disney+. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by my fellow med pod escapee from a drowning city. You know him as Tony Sindelar. Hi, Tony.
Hey, at least you got your own pod. Hi, Dan. Happy to be here.
I have some questions about that, but we'll get to it later.
So
we're here to cover the season finale of The Bad Batch, Kamino Lost. And we do know that they're coming back for a second season at some undisclosed time, I believe. So we'll be viewing this in that light, I'm sure, to a certain degree. We'll run through a recap, and then we'll talk a little bit about what happened in the episode and, of course, what might happen next season. Lots of possibilities. Tony, why don't you run us through a recap?
All right, I am doing the recap. So, Bad Batch, Season 1, Episode 16, Kamino Lost. Guess what, everybody? Bad things are going to happen to Kamino. Our episode picks up right where the last one ended, with Kamino being basically bombarded by the cruisers, by Admiral Rampart carrying out Grand Moff Tarkin's orders. Everything is klaxon alarms and explosion. The group is running through wreckage. Things are falling and exploding, and they get separated. AZ and Omega and Crosshair are in a room that's flooded, and the rest of the Bad Batch has to get them out. AZ continues to provide that classic droid optimism. You are moments away from drowning, Crosshair. They were running through it. There's lots of great kind of showing us the landscape of the world as we see cloning tanks exploding as the labs are sinking into the ocean. There's lots of things falling. Sometimes there's intermixing scenes that are beautiful with scenes that are so dark I can't tell what's going on. Eventually, the Bad Batch is trapped on the bottom of the ocean floor. They end up taking refuge in their old barracks, which is probably a metaphor for something. Hunter and Crosshair argue about orders, and or they argue about following orders versus blind loyalty. There's a lot in this episode of intermixing. Thing happens, and brief conversation about something, and then more things happen. It's kind of like the movie The Core, a movie I enjoy. They cut into the tunnel that's going to lead them back to the Marauder. This episode is a little bit the previous episode's geography, but in reverse, which I think works okay. Except everything is out of power and explodey and underwater now. There's further discussions with Crosshair by Wrecker and Tech about just the nature of, I don't know, individuality. They're in a tunnel leading back to Nala Se's secret lab when some kind of sea monster is attacking them. AZ is able to temporarily scare it off, but just barely because the power dies. They make it into the secret lab where they talk more about how Omega was born here and is older than the Bad Batch and saw them born. Hunter and Crosshair tried more barbs about Omega and the Empire, and you know, Crosshair is a real jerk about basically anytime they do anything that Omega suggests. There's some great lines in here about the Empire destroyed an entire city, the city you're currently in, Crosshair, versus they did what had to be done. I'm an angsty clone. A little bit of Roy Kent voice there. Crosshair clearly intends to be part of the new world order that the Empire is promising. And it seems like Crosshair may truly be evil and not just brainwashed or memory chipped or whatever. So they are stuck. The plan is to float to the surface in medical capsules, which AZ tells them they are not designed to do, and that AZ is going to steer them. There is an action sequence that I really couldn't tell what was going on, where AZ pods are being pulled up for the debris field, and some of the clones are in their own pod and some are not. And it's scary and dark and lots of stuff is going on. AZ is running out of power and basically looks, AZ runs out of power just as Omega is brought to the surface. Omega dives after AZ to rescue AZ. The Bad Batch is on the surface of the water. There's burning fire everywhere. Crosshair pulls out a gun in an ominous moment, but it's to shoot a grappling hook down to pull Omega and AZ back to safety. They finally make it to the Marauder landing station, crawling up out of the ocean. The skies are a little bit clearer now. They have kind of one last chance. Crosshair, you can come with us. And no, Crosshair is just going to sit there and pout on the landing platform and wait to be picked up by the Imperial Scouts, hopefully sometime soon. And yeah, cut to some kind of forest mountain planet. Probably not the one we saw two episodes ago, but maybe. Nala Sang shows up and there's some secret Imperial lab with a scientist wearing goggles. Really not much of a post-credit smash there to tell us anything. And the episode ends. Also, I'll note, I don't think Echo, one of my favorite members of the Bad Batch, has a line of dialogue in this entire episode.
So, I think he has one, but it's sometimes hard to tell when they've got the helmets on because his voice is close to Hunter's. It is different. I know enough that when I hear him, I can usually pick out when it's an Echo line, but he doesn't have a lot to do.
He does not have a lot. So that was this episode. It moves pretty briskly. They do a lot of that, like you're going to have maybe a minute or two of conversation and then things are exploding and we're running and the ocean is trying to kill us. I was reminded of Deep Blue Sea, a movie where people are trapped underwater with genetically engineered sharks, but also, things are scary. Dan, how'd you feel about it? What should we call out?
There's a lot that I like in this episode. I feel like, as with the previous episode, it continues to deliver on what I think is the most interesting conflict in this entire series, which is having Crosshair set up as I'm the version of you who chose to sort of follow orders and stick with the Empire versus you all went off on your own. There's a lot at stake here, which is nice, and our stakes are very personal. But it's also sort of tied into the larger issues of what's happening in the universe. And that's what makes it feel to me more interesting and relevant than some of the previous episodes where it's like you can put people in peril or whatever, but you know, if you just have them riding in mine cars and they're about to fall in and there's a bunch of monsters that'll eat you, it's less interesting to me than involving sort of the galactic events that are happening all around them. So I liked all that. I thought that was great. I agree with you that some of this was very dark and it was hard to follow at times. I had to turn the brightness way up.
Yes, I'm watching it. Just to clarify, I meant visually dark, thematically dark.
Yeah.
I guess there's some thematic darkness in terms of, are all Kaminoans basically murdered now?
I don't think most of them are there anymore, it seems like.
I don't know. They blew up a lot of real estate.
So I had a couple, there were a couple interesting things that struck me as I watched this episode. And the first one is, that scene where Rampart at the beginning is destroying Kamino, he has a conversation with a clone trooper who is like super bummed, right?
Yes.
Like, and I thought that was really interesting because it does show that the clones have some degree of independence of thought or feeling or whatever. Like we've talked a lot in this season about what are the impacts of the inhibitor chip. How persistent is sort of what Order 66 has done to them. And it certainly seems, as with our experiences with Hauser on Ryloth a few episodes ago, that we have a lot of clones who are still maybe not entirely on board with what the Empire is doing here.
Yeah, we're not given complete information, but it sure seems like Order 66... like tripped a thing in their brain and they were all like compelled to do stuff, right? And they were all talking like robots and killing their Jedi and masters and whatnot. And even in Clone Wars, we have the episode where Order 66 happens and they're all, you know, they're shooting their friends and acting kind of they are not themselves. I think Order 66 has passed and they've probably been conditioned for a loyalty and fed a heavy stream of propaganda, but are capable of independent thought. And it seems like a decent number of them are using that independent thought to be like, this isn't great. And some of them are like, and maybe some of them are vocalizing that and trying to get away. And others are like, well, yeah, this isn't great, but I was built to do this. What else am I supposed to do? And, you know, I enjoyed the back and forth with Crosshair and the various parts of the Bad Batch. And I like when Tech is like, I'm not actually defending you. I think that you're built this way and you won't do anything else. It's not that you're doing the right thing. It's just that I believe you're basically incapable of change. I think there is the weird thing with Crosshair, and perhaps we just have to be willing to accept it of Crosshair as a character. Crosshair seems to have very little, or maybe not very little, significantly less loyalty to his group than whereas we see other clones are very into brotherhood, and he is, I guess, one of the more self-serving clones out there. I mean, he does feel like they should come along with him and that it's them who have let him down, but yeah.
Right. I mean, that's where it comes down to, is I think he feels some of that is probably because he felt abandoned by them, but some of it is also, I think he's always been a loner, kind of, is sort of the even within the group. And in some ways he's being manipulative and saying like, oh, I thought you guys were going to come back and, you know, you not leave me on my own. But there's a question of how much he really wants that. And I enjoyed his conversations both with Hunter and with Omega about this in terms of like, what is the relationship between all these clones? How do they view each other? And yeah, I think that's an interesting way to approach it.
I am. And I think I'm up for believing that, like, even as they have this conversation while they're, like, trapped in flaming wreckage under the ocean, you know, and it's like, the Imperials, like, left you to die, Crosshair, slash, are basically tried to kill you because you're inconvenient, but he does not see any path out that is not, I'm part of them, and they're gonna elevate me, right? And, you know, I mean, he has not seen how the Bad Batch live, but you could imagine if he did, he would be like, what are you guys doing? This is not the life of a soldier, this is, you know, I want to run around and shoot people and this is not, you guys are scrapping for lunch the next day. This is pathetic. I mean, I thought I guess he solidifies himself as a villain here, or at least philosophically at odds with
them. I'll push back on that a little bit. I mean, I think certainly philosophically at odds, but the fact that he does save AZ and Omega speaks to the fact that he is at least has some cognizance of like what is going on, and he's not, I'm not sure that he's evil so much as he has chosen a very different path, right? And I think what's been potentially interesting about that is it's not hard to imagine that, like, you know, we don't see what happens to him post the Bad Batch leaving in this episode. So season two, I mean, if he just goes back to the Empire and be like, wow, it was wild how that you guys managed to shoot that whole place down around me, and I was fine, just like you planned on doing, right, guys? Right, guys? I mean, does he have any doubts at all sowed by this? Mm-hmm. Is he going to continue with the Empire, or is he going to end up sort of having to chart his own separate course? Sure. Because I don't think even Rampart is going to be that happy to see him. No. You know,
he's a loose end.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, he's a loose... it's inconvenient that he's alive. B, the context of him, of the things he did shortly before they fired on the city are bad. I forget if Rampart knows all the detail on that or not, and that he shot a bunch of, you know, trainees. I guess I wonder, you know, is this the show saying goodbye to Crosshair? I mean, I think you've pointed out there are things we could do with him. I guess I'm wondering, it's like, it feels like perhaps he and the Bad Batch are on different trajectories now. And so,
yes,
if the show is about the Bad Batch, maybe we don't need to spend a lot of time with Crosshair.
Well, I think it's possible that he will come back into their orbit at some point next season, but I think we may spend some time with him trying to, like, I can easily envision a future where, like, he goes back to report to the Empire. The Empire tries to kill him because he's a loose end. He escapes, but he's like, I don't want to go back to the Bad Batch and admit that I was wrong about the Empire, so I gotta, like, go off on my own and have, like, a journey.
That would be, I guess, and, you know, they could do that. The Dave Filoni Star Wars verse is always happy to go off and do weird things. I guess I don't need to see more. I'm hunting down the Bad Batch and I'm in charge of bringing them in.
Yes, I agree.
It feels like that's, we've closed the book on that.
You had your chance, right? You got them.
Yes.
You got them, and you did not deliver on that, so it's time for you to move on and have a new plan.
Your trap was super lousy. You no longer have trap privileges.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Other stuff in this episode I enjoyed, there is that one brief scene you mentioned where they see all, like, the cloning facility underwater, and they have, like, kind of a moment pause, which kind of is an echo of last week's, where you had those shots of all the facilities empty. So again, it just reinforcing, like, this is, they have very mixed feelings about Kamino, but to all of them it was their home, right? And I think again,
they are seeing their house burned down in this episode. Like, their childhood home,
and it links in to what we were talking to about the other clones feeling bummed about it, is like everybody, literally every clone lived there. That was their home. Yes. So I think having that aspect of them, and it was something that occurred to me, but I meant to mention earlier, was in terms of the individuality, you never forget exactly that these people have the sort of Jango Fett template, right? Which is to say, even though they have been bred for loyalty and conditioned and all that, there's probably still an element of the, like, well, I was a bounty hunter, like a badass bounty hunter, right, who did his own thing and kind of lived by his own code. So there might be always be a little bit of a hint of that somewhere in their DNA.
I mean, especially, you know, the Jango Fett, Boba Fett line seems to be about survival more than anything, right? Yeah. Whatever happens, they get through it as far as they can, you know,
We did not, as we predicted last week, get any further revelations really about Omega. We know, other than we know that she is older than all of them, which was just sort of confirming something that we heard last week, that I assume, again, she was grown in real time as opposed to having, like, accelerated aging. So she was, you know, grew up like a normal person rather than being, like, put in a vat.
Yeah, and, you know, I think episode one, it's like, oh, she's gonna have force powers because it's Star Wars, and how far can you go in any show without someone having force powers?
Yep.
I guess I don't need her to have force powers. And slash, you know, I just thought that's what you did in Star Wars.
Sure, yeah.
So if they don't need to do that, that I guess that's fine. I don't feel strongly. If Omega doesn't have a secret power, I guess I'm fine with that. It sure seems like you would have introduced at least a hint of that in season one of the show.
Yep. Or in the finale, at least, if you're putting the hook in, right? Like, yeah, I think it's just possible, like, and this will sort of, you know, dovetail in with our questions about season two in terms of, like, how, if she is, so much of season one was about her maintaining her place on the team, right? Like, insisting that she is a member of the team. And if going into season two, she's going to continue doing that. Is this going to be a situation where we're going to see more and more training of her and her developing her skills from all of them, right? Like,
yep.
I think that's potentially interesting. The scene I thought was one of the best scenes in this, which actually literally almost made me tear up, was the scene where AZ saves Omega at the very end. And it, like, I thought it was going to be a bing bong moment, you know, like, here you go, you're free, you know, and then she goes,
I was
after,
like, AZ, just clamp onto the thing, you could do it, AZ.
Yeah. I mean, it also answers the question for dramatic purposes of, well, you said you had to, you know, even out the mass of everybody, so why didn't you just put in Omega with, like, Wrecker or something? I mean, if you can have two normal size clones in one pod, then surely you can have one small child and one giant dude in another pod. But the answer is they needed her to be able to swim down to get AZ.
Yeah. And I assumed it was they don't want to put Crosshair alone, right? I mean, it was kind
of... Yeah, but Echo and Tech were stuck in a pod together, which did not really make any sense.
I don't know. Yeah.
It's fine. It's not that big a deal. Fine. It just amused me. But I thought that scene was really touching. I mean, like, I enjoy AZ a lot as a character, and so that sacrifice felt very meaningful at the time. I am glad that they rescued AZ.
Yeah.
Because
so that ship is getting crowded. Maybe that Gawk droid gets demoted to, you know.
I was really hoping they were going to... Yeah, they have to plug AZ into the Gawk droid to recharge AZ. There are a lot of people who are sort of... And I'm fine with that. I like having a rich group of secondary characters. I think it's one of the things that helps the show.
I mean, but the Gawk droid doesn't talk. So,
yeah. It says Gawk.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that they rescued AZ. I liked that whole scene. I thought the bit with Crosshair saving Omega and AZ was a good moment. I especially loved the scene where he puts the rifle down and they're all pointing guns at him.
Yes.
I thought that was excellent. It's a scene that did not need any explanation. It basically has no dialogue, but ends with Crosshair tossing his rifle to Wrecker. But I thought that was a great use of sort of action and non-dialogue to have a arc to a particular scene. So that was nicely done. A lot of this episode looks great, as usual.
Yeah.
It's hard even when it's dark, but, like, I thought, for example, the wreckage when they sort of end up surfacing and they're all in the pods waiting for Omega to come back up, it all looks very dynamic. A lot of the stuff in with the, you know, cities being destroyed and stuff like that has sort of an epic scale to it. I did enjoy, as you point out, that it's sunny at the end, which I thought was really funny. It's like, oh, it's the one nice day on Camino.
I was going to say, literally, has there ever been a day on Camino where it's not pouring rain?
There must be one, yeah. I guess, every year or something.
Yeah. Maybe it's a, yeah, if only the clouds were bombarded with laser blasts from capital ships, they'd have nice weather.
It really burns off that marine layer. Mm. So let's talk a little bit about season two, and we can start with the, I've got like gradations of conspiracy corner stuff here, which is the,
conspiracy corner.
Yeah. So first of all, somebody pointed out that the, uniform being worn by the medical tech at the end is the same as Dr. Pershing from The Mandalorian, the guy who was experimenting.
I was going to ask if it was kind of from the same unit as Moff Gideon's stuff.
Yeah, so, I mean, it seems pretty clear based on these like screenshots that they're wearing the exact same outfit.
Even allowing for, you know, in animation, they slightly stylized stuff, so that you're not going to get a one-for-one.
But we have that. Also, I just want to say her goggles look like techs, which I thought was funny.
Yes, they did. I mean, I think it's, you know, they're military issues. Space goggles. Dan, that's what they look like.
Makes sense. And we know there's cloning stuff going on there. I'm curious as to how much of Nala Se that we see next season versus, like, is that a plot line that we're linking into larger events, or is that a plot line that is just, continues on in the show?
Well, Dan, we're in Conspiracy Corner. Do the math. How far are we? Is Grogu born at this point already? Or are we about... Because Grogu is 50 at the time of Mandalorian, right?
Grogu should be alive because we're probably about 17 years or so before A New Hope. Plus three or so for
and Mandalorian is like 10 years after.
It's about eight. So I think we're only... Grogu is, in theory, alive at this point. However, I mean, if you want to throw in clones of, good old Emperor Palpatine, that's a possibility.
I don't. I'm just saying that as far as Dee Bradley Baker clones go, I think Grogu is my favorite, and then there's a long, long list, and then Emperor Palpatine's
toward the
bottom.
We don't know that Grogu's a clone.
Yeah, you're right.
Either.
We don't know that. He is simply of interest to cloners. That's true.
Yes,
we don't
exactly.
know that he's a clone. The cloners want him, and they want his blood. But yeah,
right. And there was cloning stuff on that facility on Navarro.
You're right. I am. It is unfair of me to assume that he is a clone just because cloners super want his genetic material. So yeah.
So
he has
that's
spent
a question.
Some time then, in a cloning facility, possibly.
That is true. Yeah. Now, deeper in the conspiracy corner, if you want to pull out some deep cuts from the good old expanded universe.
That facility
at the end, my first thought was, wait, didn't the Emperor have like a wacky storehouse where he kept all his like weird cloning gadgets and everything
in the Thrawn books?
Yes, in the Thrawn
books. I don't remember what that planet
it's called,
looked like.
The place is called Mount Tantus.
And
I don't know. Other people have made this potential connection as well. I have no idea if that's a thing or not, but it certainly made me think about it when I saw it, which is on the planet Wayland. I don't know. It feels like it has a very Ralph McQuarrie look to it or something. I don't know, but I think there's
with the mountains that they have just cut a giant kind of base into.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so
not very secret looking.
But we don't know where it is. We don't know what planet it's on. We don't know what purpose other than it is a medical facility of some kind or a research facility of some kind. We don't know anything else about it. So I'm very curious to see if that is a plot that gets picked up next season or if it's just sort of assumed to feed into some of the larger Star Wars lore that's being constructed. But we also know that Other stuff from the Thrawn trilogy has been re-canoned into the new chronology, so it's not out of the question that there could be some link there.
Dave Filoni has been hard at work. It's like Disney threw that stuff out, and he's like, nope, one by one, I will bring it back.
I will pick through it,
and guess what? I'm going to make some of it live action, and no one can stop me. So,
I was going to throw out there, I would not be shocked to see Grand Admiral Thrawn surface in the next season of the Bad Batch.
No, I would not be. I would not be either. He's not a Grand Admiral at that point, right? But he's presumably been around.
Lesser Admiral.
Because he's, or maybe he's, I don't know, Corporal or something, but he's presumably Corporal Thrawn. He's had a while. Now, I just watched an episode of Rebels last night with Grand Admiral Thrawn in it. Grand Admiral Thrawn, is he basically the only uniformed Imperial that we see that is not human?
Yeah, so...
I know in the books they talk about that's, you know, space racism and that's rare.
And right, and that was a testament to the fact that he gets that far, basically.
Yes.
And I think at some point he is like a secret... The emperor makes him a grand admiral, but doesn't like tell anybody. Basically,
it's not in the newsletter.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think there are any other prominent examples, or
I
any
was just trying to think
possible
in, even
other
in the
examples
recent...
at all of non-humans in the Empire. So yeah, I don't know. I think space racism is alive and well in the Empire, I guess.
Yay.
Well, they're bad, so we can hate them for that. I'm amazed that they've been that cool with clones, frankly. I mean, I don't know. It seems like they're...
We still don't know what happens to them. A lot of them disappear in the next 8 years or so, Dan.
It was interesting to point out that there are still... The army seems to predominantly still be made of clones at this point, right? Which makes sense. There are tens of thousands of them.
And the group that I was watching, the group that is with Nala Se when she is greeting them on that secret installation, those are all the kind of clone special forces.
Yep.
Commandos. So those are theoretically all clones and not recruits. So it seems like right now, if you have a glowing visor, offer possibly not valid a year after this glowing visor, you are a clone and maybe the best clones available. And if you are not, you are a recent, trainee recruit.
Well, there is still, and as we pointed out, on Rampart ship, there are still clone troopers, standard regs.
That's true. There were regs wearing hats. Yeah.
I think the issue is there's also like, it takes time, right? I mean, they only have like 1,000 TK troopers at this point. Nobody's uttered the word stormtrooper. You know, I think there's a lot of... it's a gradual process, and I think we're going to continue to see more of that. But I think this sort of links into my other big question about season two is, and I think I brought this up a few episodes ago, I'm kind of curious to see if they take a time jump or not. Because I think it could go either way. I mean, I think they could basically pick up like, you know, a few weeks or a month later or whatever, and we kind of see where they've been up to for a while. But I think they could also take the possibility to jump a year or two and sort of develop Omega and have her grow up a little bit and struggle more with like, all right,
because they can age her up. Yeah,
right, they can age her up and have her like struggling with like, all right, like I gotta pull my weight in the team, etc. It also gives you a chance to sort of reset the board a bit and have them more established. You know, if season one was about them scrapping to try and find their next lunch, maybe they now have a more settled place to live or gigs or what have you. There's a lot of pieces on the board. You've got Sid, you've got Gregor, you've got Rex. You know, there's a lot of people they could be dealing with. So I'm actually pretty optimistic about where a season two could go. But I think there are a lot of ways they could do it.
Yeah, and I think that might in some ways take... I mean, I think there was perhaps a little bit of pressure in terms of expectations on this show in terms of, like, this is the first thing that we've seen after... in this era, right? After episode 3, we've seen a little bit in the lead up to episode 4, but there was this big chunk of uncharted territory. And I think, I don't know, I think I was a little disappointed because it felt like... we weren't getting enough of that, and we wanted that because we'd seen nothing about that. And it's hard because it's like, well, really, this show, it's a little bit about that, but it's also kind of, it's about these particular group of five and what they are seeing. And, you know, it's like they don't have complete access to what's going on.
Right.
And, you know, Star Wars, I think, does a pretty good job at showing us that, like, you know, all these episodes in the Clone Wars that are on the Capital World Coruscant versus stuff on the Outer Rim, it's like things are different.
Yeah.
And life is different. And even, you know, there were Bad Batch episodes where we basically see the Empire is doing stuff to consolidate power in worlds that were not loyal to them, worlds that were neutral, and hey, worlds that were loyal to them are being strangely kind of occupied and pushed around, like Ryloth. And to me, there's a little bit of tricky stuff there where it's like in Star Wars Rebels, which is a good 15 years later, we're just starting to see that happen. But I think the answer is it's just starting to happen on the Outer Rim, right? The Outer Rim has been the Wild West, and now the Empire is starting to crack down on the outskirts because they've completely locked down everything closer in than that.
In the core, yeah.
So...
I think that's an interesting point, and I think it's a question of knowing that we're still, you know, what, 17, 18 mm-hmm. years out from A New Hope. There's a lot of ground in there to cover, and it's another reason I think that jumping forward in time makes a little bit of sense, because, like, if the answer is all this stuff is a gradual thing, and you don't have, like, a sea change mm-hmm. moment where everything is like, oh, everything
is
different
now. Well,
and
I feel like it's happening... planet by planet, right? And I don't know. I mean, Rebels is all about the rebellion is forming for the first time, and so that basically there did not exist a rebellion before that. You know, I thought about recently, like, well, maybe there was a proto-rebellion right around the era of the Bad Batch, and it gets crushed. Right,
sure.
And they get scattered to the wind, right? I mean, you know, you could, maybe that's what happens with Rex, right? Rex gets mixed up in something and then has to go into hiding.
It's not even a rebellion at this point so much as it's people fleeing, right? Like, we saw Guerrera in episode one, and it's like same sort of thing where it's like, look, we are in deep trouble. We have just got to make ourselves scarce for the mm-hmm. moment before we can even think about fighting back. We have to survive.
Yes. And nothing can happen outside. We are stuck on our planet dealing with stuff, which is tricky because the Bad Batch don't have a home, right?
Has kind of become their home. It's unclear whether or not they'll stick with that, but...
Yeah, because that is that tricky thing of, like, do they care about any one planet more than the next planet over?
Right, right.
If bad things start happening to a planet, do they care or do they just leave?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question for them to address potentially in season two, is like, mm-hmm. where do their new loyalties lie? Are they really just like, we live on a spaceship and, like, we don't really care. We go from place to place, like the A-Team, or is this like, we have a, you know, we have a new home. We're starting to build a new life, mm-hmm. you know, new lives for ourselves. And thus we have an investment and feel like we need mm-hmm. to protect these things. I think those are interesting questions worth asking.
I think I would be excited for there to be a little bit of a time jump. I think that could ease up stuff. It would make potentially the, like, you continue to bring a child into combat situations a little less dicey. And, you know, I wonder if we do a time jump, perhaps we start with things have settled down and everything's kind of moving along and they've got some peace and quiet for about 8 minutes until it all comes. You know, it's kind of falling apart. I guess that's the question of, do we need to see them finding their place in the world, or can we cut forward a little bit and then see that threatened, and then they have to find their new place in the world? So anything else in that season two conspiracy corner? Anything else you want to shake out of there?
I mean, like,
you
want
to say anything about how many years in the Dave Filoni-verse are we from the Mary Jade popping up? Is there a clock, Dan, counting down?
I don't have that countdown clock running, but I'm sure someone on the internet does. I don't have anything else in my conspiracy corner tank for this particular one, but I will say before we wrap up, and we've talked about this a little bit, but I figured, like, you have any brief thoughts about the season as a whole and, like, how you felt?
Yeah,
about
we
the show?
Should. I don't know if we could give this a rating, but
I don't have a rating system.
Oh, I've heard you do. We talk about it. So, we've been, I think I've been up and down on individual episodes. This is the challenge of, a little peek behind the scenes here. Dan and I like Star Wars, and we committed to doing a podcast about this. And it's always tricky because you hope that a show that you commit to doing a podcast about will be amazing and excellent. And I will say, I've had kind of my regular routine of watching this the same day every week. And, I look forward to that. It is not a chore. There have been other shows where I've been a little bit more locked into it, either as a chore, whether for podcasts or just sunk cost fallacy things. But it is, I think it didn't quite live up to my perhaps overly lofty expectations. This was very much a continuation of the Clone Wars cartoon that's been going, for many years. And the Clone Wars cartoon is uneven as all get out. It has some amazing highs and some pretty, pretty low lows. And I think there's always that hope with other Dave Filoni stuff that it'll hit some of those highs again. And I don't think that the Bad Batch ever got to any of those highs of Clone Wars. I compare it a little bit to say the last season of the Clone Wars, which was the most recently released media. I don't think it hits any of those moments.
Those are some pretty high highs.
Those are some pretty high highs. It comes the closest with these last two episodes and those first three. But then there was, what does that leave us? There's still, there's like 11 episodes in the middle there that are pretty up and down. So that's, I enjoyed watching it. I am happy to watch season two. It is hard. I think there are a lot of Star Wars fans out there who aren't as into the animation. And are not as, Star Wars completionists as you or I, Dan. And, no one can be a Star Wars completionist. It's just, it's not possible. Someone's writing me an email right now, but there are limits. There is limit, maybe you're not going to read all the comic books, or you're not going to play all the video games, or, you cannot consume all of it. There is way, way too much. Someone out there is trying very hard. And, I think for some people, animation is a line, and this is probably not one that's like, I think there might be some people out there who are like really into The Mandalorian, and they're like, should I watch The Bad Batch? And it's like, well, if you like Clone Wars, you should watch The Bad Batch. And they're like, well, I never watched Clone Wars. And it's like, you should start with that. It might not get some people across the line. So that was a very long, meandering answer, Dan, to how I felt about the season. Dan Morin, how do you feel about the season?
I think you kind of hit a lot of the points that I had, which is I thought the last three episodes, I thought were all very good. I liked the introduction episode. I think that was great. There were some episodes in the middle that I enjoyed, particularly the Ryloth episodes, but a lot of it really felt like filler. And yep. I understand why you need that. If you get to the end of this and haven't built that whole sort of Crosshair relationship throughout the entire season and sort of showed them having a life that was at risk, I don't think these last episodes work as well. But that said, I think those individual episodes often were kind of underwhelming. So, there's been a lot of tonal jumps, as our friend Joe Rosenstiel likes to point out, we're talking about stuff with a kid. Oh, we have terrible things about the horrors of war. It's like sometimes in the same episode, within a couple minutes, it's hard to tell who's the audience for that show. So I think that there have been some... I don't know that this necessarily either hits the high highs of Clone Wars or the low lows of Clone Wars either, right?
It doesn't.
It's a little bit more even keeled as far as that goes. I would not necessarily put it... I think Rebels for me is a show that, especially having recently rewatched the entire thing, that show really hits for me almost on all cylinders. I think there are some down moments
consistent
in it, but it is very consistent as a show. And I think that the Bad Batch hasn't quite risen to that level yet, but I think that there is some potential for it. And I think expanding the tapestry a little bit in season two of having them have, more recurring characters to deal with and perhaps stuff that ties it more into the season of what else is happening in the galaxy right now, I think there's a potential to grow there. So I'm certainly not writing it off like you. I'm eager to see season two. I do have a lot of fondness for these characters now. But I would like to see the game get upped for season two in terms of hey, if you're telling 16 episodes, that's not a super long season. You kind of got to hit with most of those. So really make it count. Yeah, so I'm you know, I am positive about this season, but it was not, like you, I think my expectations were higher than were probably reasonable to be met.
Yeah, that sounds like us.
That's us. So. People with high standards. Mm-hmm. At least in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for season one. We're done. I don't know when we'll be back, because we have not yet been told, I believe, when season two will air. Someone can confirm for me. Sometime next year, I guess. But we don't have anything more specific than that. I also have no information about when the next Star Wars series airs, other than I believe the Book of Boba Fett is expected to show up around Christmas, holiday time. That may be the next Star Wars series in the hopper.
It's weird to not have Star Wars, you know, hot and cold running Star Wars once a week.
Right,
we went through a nice little era there.
So there's a lot of stuff where we're kind of uncertain right now. So I don't know when A Complicated Profession will return, but rest assured we will return. Probably no later than, I think, December is officially the Book of Boba Fett launch time. So certainly we'll be back no later than that. But I can't say. Maybe we'll pop up somewhere in between now and then. What do you know? I don't know. So that's it. That's what we got. But as we wrap up this installment of A Complicated Profession, I would like to thank, of course, my compatriot through thick and thin through this entire season of The Bad Batch, Tony Sindelar.
Oh,
thanks so much
for
being here.
I thought it was going to be somebody else.
That's you.
The
other host who I do this show with, you know.
I assume you do these episodes twice, so the second one's a little, you know, not as rusty. Thanks, Dan. It's been a joy to talk about Star Wars every week, even if the episode has not always been amazing. And, you know, I've enjoyed parts of every episode, and some of the episodes have been great. It is fun to talk about Star Wars once a week, so I've enjoyed that. And I hope you've enjoyed listening. We got a variety of tweets around the last episode, people who felt validated that their various theories about what would happen with Crosshair did or didn't come true. So I enjoyed. Thank you for sharing those with us. I'll also mention I just built the Bad Batch attack shuttle. It was a fun build to Lego build to do, though it's disappointing. It doesn't come with Omega. Oh, well.
Well, I hope you've all enjoyed listening as well to A Complicated Profession. And I'll remind you, of course, you can go on to Apple Podcasts and give us a rating there. We appreciate it if you enjoy the show. If you don't enjoy the show, you don't have to give us a rating. That's not mandatory.
Yeah, well, you know, do whatever you want.
Yeah, do your thing. It's fine. And you can, of course, reach us on Twitter at ACP_cast or hit us up by email at ACP@theincomparable.com. It's been a lot of fun talking about the Bad Batch this season, and we look forward to talking about more Star Wars in the future for your listening enjoyment. So until we see you next time, may the Force be with you.
Keep it complicated, nerds.